Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips haircut app and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
After hearing Matt Nagy speak about his play-calling philosophy once again on Monday, do you have any faith in his ability to get a run game going? And will he ever show the patience to stick with the run, even if it's working?
You know, I got to tell you, as I watched Matt Nagy talking, I kept occurring, and he talked about the run game. He talked about this leadership thing. There'll be leaders stepping up. And I'm sitting there watching this thinking to myself, wait a minute. You're 7 weeks into this season, right? You had your bye week. So you're 7 weeks into this season, and you're not sure who your leaders are, and you don't know how to run the football, and you can't figure out a way to stick with the run? It is fascinating to me when he talks about being a play caller and how he wants to run plays and successful plays. And if the run game's not going, then you can't stay with it. The run game, the way you run the football, is you actually run it, and then you run it again, and then you run it some more. And you keep feeding that, and then eventually it wears on teams and it wears them down. Apparently it wears on him. I think he's bored running the football. I think he's, you know, the old don't get bored. We'll talk to Dave. Dave will be in studio. Dave wants that later in the show. And he's a guy that understood how to run the football. Matt Nagy, that he philosophically does not want to run the football. And even if it were working, even if they were just get, I got a feeling he'd get away from it.
But you know what, though? We created sort of that.
Turned him into Mr. Play Caller.
He's Mr. Play Caller.
And I understand that. He came from Andy Reid. And what they do there, they collect plays. They just collect plays, individual plays that work in different systems. And then they incorporate the good play into their system. And they want to constantly be calling good plays. But, and I'm not saying just run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. But let me tell you something. He's never going to do that. They had like a 9-yard run, their best run of the game. And then they threw the ball 12 straight times.
It's not working. It's not working. And you know what? It's interesting because I think that we've spent the first, you know, season and a half since he's been here and year and a half applauding him for being the play caller, the innovative guy, the offensive mind. And we make a big deal about, you know, be you. It's on his play card, be you. And this Bears offense has been Matt Nagy. But you know what? That's not good enough because that's not what they need right now. They don't need him to look at it and think be you. He needs to look at it and say be us. The Bears need an identity offensively as a collective group and not just be, you know, an extension of their head coach's imagination. And I think what happens is that he doesn't have the discipline to commit to a running game. And you're seeing that because he falls in love with his own ideas and he needs to hand the ball to a receiver on a jet sweep. And then he needs to, you know, go empty in the backfield. And he just these gimmicky things line up, commit to running the ball. And you know, you say you can't go into a game thinking you're going to throw 54 times or run 54 times. How about a 60-40 run pass ratio or even 50-50 for goodness sakes? Do something that's working around the rest of the league and you're the coach and you now, you're right. The off week was a time for this reflection and this self-scouting and this commitment, but now you've got to do it and condense it into this week and you've got to coach your team out of a crisis because if you lose again, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And you've got to start to turn the arrow.
If you lose again, David, you may lose like 7 in a row.
Yeah, you could.
I'm just saying. And this is a very winnable game. This is a game you got to win. You got to win this game. It's not even – this is now a must game.
You're the offensive coach whose offense is broken. Fix it.
Yeah, I mean, teams really – they don't like having the bye week this early in the season just because of, you know, from an attrition standpoint and guys getting banged up as the season goes along. But in the case of Bears, not only do the players probably not like the bye week, Matt Nagy would probably like another bye week to try to get this thing together after they came out so flat and had such a terrible performance on Sunday. What I don't understand, and I don't know if Matt Nagy gets bored running the ball, but clearly his philosophy doesn't really lean on that. What I'm wondering, though, is why move up in the draft to take David Montgomery in the third round? Why sign Mike Davis to a free agent contract? Why are you bringing in running backs if you don't want to utilize these running backs? That's the part I can't wrap my head around. Are Pace and Nagy on the same page with some of these player acquisitions? It kind of seems like they're thinking of two different philosophies or two different styles. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't seem to align, and that's what I can't really understand. Hopefully, this weekend, I mean, if that game against the Saints isn't a wake-up call for Matt Nagy and a shot in the backside, then I don't know if anything is. And you have to commit to the run this Sunday. If they don't, then when is it going to happen? If you don't see it on Sunday, I will subscribe to the theory that he just doesn't believe in it. And I know it's 2019 and it's offense, hurl the ball 60 times a game. But when your quarterback's this guy, and we'll get to the quarterback, it's probably not the best idea.
After hearing Matt Nagy yesterday, I don't have any faith in his ability to get a run game going. I don't, because to be fair, there's nothing he could say behind a podium that's going to convince me. It's going to be all up to what they do on the field, how it translates into the game. There's nothing he could do or say that's going to convince me until I see it happen in a game with this Bears team. I mean, yesterday, you guys alluded to the idea that, you know, maybe he gets bored and, he wants to just jump to these gimmick plays, whatever. Yesterday, he said, I want positive plays, and part of that is patience. He gives us the idea that he knows that you need to be patient, but where is the running game? Why haven't we seen it being implemented?
Lip service.
It's all lip service. That's what it all comes off as. It's you know the coaching tree he comes from. You know the players he has. It's all there. Why are we not seeing it yet? So there's nothing he can say that's going to convince me until I see it happen. And Mully, as you point out, I hope this doesn't become a stretch of losses. It's a reality, and it's very scary, especially considering the high expectations we had for this team.
I'm with you.
You know, I get they need to run the ball, but from the positive play standpoint, I mean, I didn't rewatch the first half because I knew exactly what happened in the first half yesterday. They played not great football, but they were close, right? Thanks to a 102-yard kickoff return. Watching that second half, I mean, there's no positive to the running game. The first six plays the Bears had the ball in the first half, looking back at the play chart, they got three runs for 2 yards. I don't blame them from going away from it. I mean, they can't do it. They just, I don't know where.
Did you hear what Mitch said, though, in the post game? He said, Mitch talked about the idea that teams are just, they're clearing out the box. They're going to keep anything from going downfield, and everything's underneath. And that's because there is no fear that they're going to, you know, you don't need seven guys in the box because they're not going to run.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
Are there more than five NFL teams who would take Mitch Trubisky over their current starting quarterback? Do you buy Nagy's contention that Mitch's problems are all due to bad footwork, and is he salvageable?
I don't think bad footwork's all of it. I think that above the shoulders is a big problem. He has no confidence. He has no confidence, and he's playing like a guy who's scared to make a mistake. He's not playing like a guy who's trying to make something happen. He is salvageable because he's still relatively young in his development. I don't know if he's salvageable or he's going to salvage his career in Chicago or elsewhere, but that's a discussion for another day. I just think he's a guy that has issues right now they have to deal with directly, immediately, and urgently, because there aren't more than five teams in the NFL who would take Mitch Trubisky over their current starter. I think when you look at if you want to make a list, you start with maybe you have the Dolphins, the Steelers because of injury, because they have Hodges and Mason Rudolph. You've got the Redskins who have three guys who can't seem to, you know, come up with a solution there, even though Dwayne Haskins was a high draft pick. He hasn't been given a chance yet. And maybe the Broncos with Joe Flacco, who's been a disappointment there. Other than that, you can make the argument that every other team feels better at quarterback, even with the Sam Darnold seeing ghosts in New York. I think that he has shown some, you know, high points that they would probably point to, say they wouldn't want Mitch over Sam Darnold, and every other team on the list in the league would make the same argument. So he's got to get better. You've got to help him get better. And I think that's what is disappointing. The more you sit back and you look at what happened Sunday and you feel like, yeah, Mitch stunk. He was terrible and he's got to be better. But you've got to help him be better. Throwing 54 passes after a guy's missed 2 weeks with injury was against that defense was not putting him in the best position to succeed. So you've got to do a better job of establishing the run, creating maybe quarterback runs, putting him in a position to succeed, because right now he's at the lowest. He's as low on the list of quarterbacks you would want in the NFL as he has been since he's entered the NFL.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's always a tendency for teams to believe that they can do what another team can't do. This happens all the time with quarterbacks. They move around. You know, the Bears ended up trading up a first-round pick for Rick Meyer. You always believe that, oh, well, see what they're doing with him? Well, we can do something different. So Mitch has a nice resume. You know, he's the number two overall pick, and they traded up to get him. So there would be a team that would take a chance on him. I think the question is about whether or not you'd want him starting for you. And I think that there probably are, you know, maybe a handful of teams that would take a look at him for some period of time. And listen, the footwork is no good. I mean, I noticed the footwork a couple of times on a couple of plays where you're kind of like, wow, that look at he's really didn't get his feet set there. But it's the brain work that is most difficult to figure out, because you know, their idea of spreading the field and opening up this offense includes having a quarterback that's going to make those throws. And when he makes the throw in practice and it's his favorite throw of the week and then he can't make it in the game, that's really disconcerting. That is a real problem that you've got to deal with. Is he salvageable? Well, he better be, because he is your best option, believe it or not. And it's one game and he's playing with a harness and you want to give him a little bit of credit for doing that, but that was an utter and complete flop. That game was god-awful, and it's got to be 10 times better than that to even register. So I guess you stay with it. I guess you keep trying. I guess you keep banging your head into a wall, and you hope it turns.
Keep banging your head into a wall and hope it turns is the greatest philosophy I've ever heard in my life, by the way.
Turn black and blue.
And that might be the theme for this Bears season, but by the time it's all said and done, bang your head into the wall until it turns and see what happens first. Looking at this question, I thought instantly, no, there couldn't be possibly five or six teams that would want Mitch Trubisky. But then you look at some of these teams, you look at some of these quarterbacks, there are so few good quarterbacks. And we say it all the time because it's true, but I feel like year by year, there are becoming fewer and fewer. It's always the same guys every single season that are the good quarterbacks, and there are so few of them, and there's not enough coming through the pipeline. And even the ones that have come up within the past couple of years, like Mahomes, are injured right now, so I'm going to throw those out. Just Miami, probably Cincinnati. I mean, they're a disaster. Washington, these are the dregs of the league here, and I think that speaks to Mitch Trubisky, who was the second overall pick in the draft, who was supposed to be the guy taking the next step finally in this ready-made team, Super Bowl aspirations, all the expectations, coming off the division title, 12-4, et cetera, et cetera. The fact that we are comparing him to whomever is starting at quarterback this week for Miami or Washington or Cincinnati, the fact that we're even broaching this conversation speaks to the larger issue at hand here, that it was a horrid, horrid draft pick, and there's no getting around it.
Yeah, we are in very pathetic territory here, unfortunately. I don't really even think, yeah, I understand, Kevbo, what you're talking about with the need for quarterbacks, but quite honestly, with how bad Mitchell Trubisky is looking, I mean, he's not making a good case for himself. I look around the league, I mean, what are we going to say? Maybe the Titans, maybe Washington. That's about it, honestly, with how bad Mitch has been looking. Do I buy Nagy's contention that Mitch's problems are all due to bad footwork? Definitely not. I mean, sure, there could be mechanics involved with his struggles, yes, and he's coming off of being injured, so there's a little bit of getting reacquainted with the mechanics and everything. I think that's part of it, but yes, as David pointed out as well, this is mental, this is mechanics, this is everything. We are seeing a bad quarterback on the field. Is he salvageable? Yes, I do think he is, but every time we see Mitch, unfortunately, it seems like the ceiling gets lower and lower and lower, and pretty soon, I'm hoping this isn't the case, but pretty soon we're going to have Mitchell Trubisky living in a tiny home.
But if you're going to throw that out as a reason...
Sorry, go ahead.
If you're going to throw that out as a reason that Mitch is doing poorly for footwork, we've joked about it. How many offensive coaches, how many people are helping on offense... And the coach is also the play caller. Like that screams you got the wrong guys on your staff, Matt Nagy, helping you and the quarterback out if you're going to go there. I almost feel like they've got him out on the plank. This is the first. I mean, I appreciated, Mully, you mentioned it and joked about it and called it Sammy Sosa. And of course, that bothered me yesterday because he had to take a shot at Sammy
that
Sosa.
That was not a shot.
That's a total shot. But
I thought it was more Ramos Ramirez.
We don't have time to get into that right this second.
You don't like that comparison?
No, I don't. No.
Matt Nagy said it was garbage time and it didn't matter. Best thing he said at the podium.
He said it on Sunday and then he doubled down on it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't need to do that. And that's, if you, David, you called for Mitch to be benched in the fourth quarter, and
yep.
I agree, and I thought that was a good thought at the time. So they left him in, and then he didn't want to hear about the fact that he actually threw some touchdown passes.
That he made some progress
and steady incremental progress. I mean that the time of the game or those is as one ex Bears head coach used to say, they get paid too. I mean these guys didn't stop trying. They didn't empty out the bench. He still threw.
They went to a prevent and they just let everything.
It's like 7-on-7.
Yeah. I don't think it counts.
Wow. Very tough question. Very, very hard.
Who do you want to win the World Series and why? Who will win it and in how many games?
I want Washington to win the World Series. I think there's a couple of reasons. Mike Rizzo has been a guest on the show. He's a Chicago guy, good guy. David Martinez connection here in Chicago. And then, obviously, the idea that you win a World Series after Bryce Harper leaves. I just think that would be so funny and just wonderful. And
you just want Adam Eaton to get a ring.
Yeah, that's it. I think it's going to be the Astros in probably 5 or 6. For the sake of this argument, I'll say 6 Astros.
I want the Nationals to win for the same reasons you mentioned with Rizzo. He was on this station on our show June 11th when the Nationals had a worse record than the White Sox and didn't feel like talking probably about it, but he did. And he talked about Lucas Giolito with a classy tone, and he's a classy guy. And he's done a great job in building that winner there in Washington. Plus, did you see the Astros story about the executive who was taunting the Sports Illustrated reporter over the Roberto Osuna stuff? Come on! That's giving you another reason to root for the Nationals. Even though the Astros are favored, wouldn't shock me because of pitching. This is all starting pitching, and the Astros have it. They have Cole. They have Verlander. They've got a great staff, but the Nationals could steal this one with 4 starting pitchers that are all pitching sort of an ace caliber. I'm going to call the upset. I'm saying Nasty Nats in 7.
Wow, Nasty Nats in 7. I am very much looking forward to this World Series. I think this is a good matchup. It's half fresh, at least. The Astros have obviously been hanging around for a few years now, but seeing Washington, what they've done this postseason when really nobody gave them a shot. Everybody thought it was destined to be the L.A. Dodgers coming out of the National League, and Washington handled them pretty handily. You know, we could talk about the Astros starting pitching, and it is excellent. But Scherzer, Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, and even Anibal Sanchez, who has found the fountain of youth for whatever reason, That's a great story there as well. I'm not going to be upset if either one of these teams wins, but one of them will, I'm assuming. But I think I will go toward rooting for the Washington Nationals if I had to pick. I'd like to see a little new blood, new guys getting to be able to win that title.
I like to see some new blood, new teams in the World Series, and this is the Nats' first one since 1933. That's an awesome story. And this is an awesome pitching matchup. These two teams have great rotations and match each other, you know, man for man. But I'm going to go with the Astros here. I just think the Astros have a better offense, and I'm going to go with Astros in seven games.
See, unfortunately, Ray, that's exactly why I want the Nationals to win, and that's why the Nationals are going to win. The Astros have been awful on offense. They don't hit with runners in scoring position, and if they live and die with the home run ball, okay? Now, one of the stats that's going against the Nationals, like six of the last eight teams that wrapped up their LCSs early have then gone on to lose the World Series, like the day off and the rust. So that's why tonight's game obviously is huge. These pitching matchups, these first two games, it's like an all-star game. If you can't get in front of your couch, at least watch until those two guys get yanked out of the game, then you don't like sports. For all the reasons you said, also a contributor of this show, I'll leave him nameless, is a huge Washington Nationals fan. One of the suits here at the Score is a huge Nationals fan.
One of the
so
suits.
I'll pull for the Nationals, and I'll even take it up a little notch. I like David's the Nasty Nats. I'm going to say Nasty Nats in six.
Oh, I like it. One up of me.
You know, it's tough to be up here answering questions.
Monday came and went without a Cubs announcement. What's the plan now? Is there a risk in waiting that Astros coach Joe Espada could turn the Cubs down if teams like the Giants or Padres don't hire anybody either?
It's interesting because the report out of Philadelphia, even complete with the photo of Joe Girardi getting into the car, is that the Phillies are set to introduce him possibly on Thursday, when the Angels are set to introduce Joe Maddon on Thursday. What happened to this protocol of not doing anything during the World Series if both those managers are supposed to be introduced on Thursday?
If the Yankees aren't in the World Series, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter? Okay. I find that curious. We didn't hear anything yesterday, and I thought we might. I thought we might get an announcement that the Cubs had named their manager and the press conference would come after the World Series. Maybe they're still making their mind up. I don't know about that. I think the longer you wait, the more, if Joe Espada is your guy, the Giants still need a manager, right? I haven't missed that. They haven't named anybody yet. The Padres, they still need a manager too. Maybe he has things that he likes about those organizations that he didn't hear from Theo or Jed. I don't know. But I think the longer it goes on, the more you do worry. If this is your guy, lock up your guy. And if we haven't heard that they've done that, then I think you start to wonder. I do think that it probably, they could name David Ross today. They could have named David Ross tomorrow. They could have named David Ross last week before the second interview, but they brought Joe Espada in for a reason, and presumably it was to kind of finalize things. That's usually how it works, isn't it? So I think it probably will go that way, but the longer it goes on, the more curious it seems.
I think Joe Espada is the guy because they didn't name David Ross. I mean, you could name David Ross. You could have named David Ross while Joe was still the manager because everybody knew what was going to happen. So The fact that they're still interviewing, the fact they brought him back for a second interview, and they still haven't named David Ross, I mean, it's crazy to me. So that must mean that Joe Espada is the guy, right? If they don't name David Ross before the first pitch, then, that means they're waiting on a guy. Doesn't logic kind of dictate that they're waiting for something if they're not naming the guy? And maybe what they're waiting on is they know David Ross is not going anywhere. So he's always available to them, so they may as well sniff around this one as long as they want. But it just seems to me that timing-wise, logic would dictate that they're waiting for something, and maybe it's Joe Espada.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's hard to argue that. They could have named David Ross the manager whenever they would have liked, and he's not being coveted by any other of his former major league stops, whether they need a managerial replacement or not. But it is starting to look like Joe Espada will be the guy. I don't think it's a terrible move. Maybe you keep David Ross around in some sort of capacity. I know he's, a front office advisor, peanut butter connoisseur, whatever he does up there in Theo's box. But maybe you put him in the dugout for a year. You put him as the bench coach to kind of bring him along a little bit more slowly. I don't know if that matters to them in any capacity, but when I saw that Espada was coming back for a second interview and the fact that the Astros are obviously still playing, signs are pointing to him instead of Ross for this upcoming year.
Can they put him in the booth? Marquee? Could they put him in the broadcast booth?
I think with Marquee, they could do whatever the hell they'd like.
I think they're going to have to if they hire him. Coach a show.
It is looking more and more like this. Joe Espada is their plan, potentially. Because, yeah, as you point out, David Ross could have been named already. So I like it. I mean, I like this is something Theo brought up. An outsider type of perspective, some fresh blood into that clubhouse to lead your team. I'm all about it. There's always a risk. Sure, that Padres job looks like a very attractive job with the young talent that they have there. So there is always a risk, but I think it's a great move if they go with Espada.
I don't like this at all. I think it what peanut butter eaten? What comment was that? I mean, give me a break, this guy over here.
What's wrong with peanut butter?
I don't think they have peanut butter up in the in
they've
the. In
different
the
types.
They do.
Oh, they do. That was a picture. Thing. That was a thing in the picture.
No.
Two different brands.
What do you mean, Skippy and Jif.
That's a disguise.
We all saw it.
That's a disguise. That's you put like a fake pop can around your beer and you can have a beer in the car. Okay, I mean that's not.
Why are they disguising?
What are they? They talking about drug use.
Beer is now a drug.
Alcohol. If you're using peanut butter to disguise something, what would it be? What are you implying?
Crunchy or smooth? I mean.
I like a little crunch.
The smooth or the clear.
It is the big smooth.
If you want David Ross, then sell David Ross. I don't like, so everybody else said no, or we just didn't like enough of what was said. Name it or don't. I mean, I don't like the dragging it on. I like the idea of talking to as many people as possible. I did like that. But yes, it's pointing towards Espada, but I don't get. Yesterday, they could have done the Bears a favor, as one of you guys pointed out, or both of you pointed out. You know, they could have done the Bears a favor to announce Espada to take some of the heat off of Nagy and Mitch and Ryan Pace, presumably. But, you know, Espada said no. Like, if Espada ends up as a manager of another team outside of you being the Cubs, and then you name David Ross, like, 10 days from now, it's kind of like, well, everybody else said no, so we settled on David Ross. And that becomes a hard pill to swallow from a fan standpoint. And as far as the Padres job, I saw something out there like they're hiring two guys, Ron Washington and somebody else whose name escapes me, and they're really not sure.
One's going to be the bench coach, one's going to be the manager.
They haven't decided. Yeah. They're hiring these two guys. Is that what's going on here in Chicago? They're going to hire David Ross and Espada, and they're going to hire a run coordinator
for Matt Nagy.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
Winner gets to be the bench coach.
The bench coach doesn't have to travel. Then maybe Mike Maddox would get engaged.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a question we're going to ask management here today.
With the NBA tipping off tonight, who are you projecting to win the title, and will the Bulls make the playoffs?
I think the NBA is going to be fascinating this year. Obviously, the Warriors are beaten up and split up, so that opens up a lot of possibility. I'm going to go with the Eastern Conference for the NBA title. I was going to go with the Bucks, but the fact that they're unwilling to go over the luxury tax makes me peeved with them. So I'm going to go with Philadelphia.
Ooh.
just as a shot.
Yeah.
And I'll take Philadelphia if they can stay healthy, if Embiid can stay healthy. And I'll take. I think the Bulls are going to be right on the verge of the playoffs. I think they have a good chance of sneaking in to the playoffs, and maybe they're the team that gets rid of the Bucks.
I like the fact that there's so much suspense. There are probably eight teams you could pick and be able to defend the argument to win the title. Good pick on the Sixers, but I think that the winner's going to come out of the East. Fear the deer. I think Giannis and company, the Bucks, will win the title over the Clippers.
Malcolm Brogdon will eliminate them.
I'm most curious to see the Rockets play. I want to see how that tandem works together. I think they could be dangerous in the West. As for the Bulls, you know, to make the playoffs last year, 41-41 got in as the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. The Bulls would have to improve by 19 victories to do that. It is a wide open NBA, so that is possible. Kobe White is pretty exciting, and this is a new team. I don't know what happened to Jim Boylan in the offseason, but the Bulls have joined the NBA. I mean, they're shooting threes. They're spacing the floor. They're talking about load management for Otto Porter Jr. Goodness sakes. This is the modern NBA. I think the Bulls get in the playoffs.
Yeah, the Bulls have improved since last season. They still have to stay healthy. I mean, we've gone over that ad nauseum. But you add Satoransky, add Thad Young. These are legitimate NBA players. And you hopefully can get more from some of your younger guys. You know, they're over under right now set at 32.5. So they're going to have to exceed everyone's expectations if they want to sniff the playoffs, including Vegas's. I'm optimistic about the Bulls. I think if they can stay healthy, they will be able to squeak in as a 7 or an 8. As far as the title this year, I think it's finally the year for the Houston Rockets. I think this is the year they finally put it all together. Defense be damned. I think
I'd love
do
to
it.
See the Clippers do it. And
it was between
young,
those two,
you know,
for me. That's going to be the Western Conference final.
Can the Rockets win the NBA title and fire the general manager in the same year?
Yeah.
If China has anything to say about
that's
it.
That's right.
My NBA finals prediction will be Clippers against 76ers. Clippers win. Kawhi wins 2 years in a row, two teams. That'd be big. So that's my prediction, and I do think the Bulls will make the playoffs this year.
Let's go like old school mid 80s. Let's go Sixers Lakers.
I love
Let's
that.
Let's go Sixers Lakers.
Caldwell Jones is going to guard Worthy?
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be that's the kind of basketball I'd like to see. And here's the reason I'm going with the Lakers. LeBron's not getting any younger, and if not now, when? And it's a battle of L.A. I mean, I won't stay up for it tonight. I can't lose a night of sleep for the game one of the NBA season. But I wish this was Friday or Saturday night because I'd at least DVR it. I might pull a Mully and DVR this game, an NBA game, and go back and watch it just to have some idea of what's going on in the West. But if not now, when for the Lakers? You know, Golden State's down. Houston's going to try hard every single night, right? But I just don't know that those two guys can get along. And I'm hoping that the Bulls are the 7th or 8th seed. Absolutely.
All right, that is the 5 at 5. What do you think? 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.